Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and no Christine this week, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who play with needles and or make fine art with needle and thread. But I'm not alone this week. Fortunately, with us from Sassy Jack Stitchery in Weaverville, North Carolina, Kim Young. Hi, Kim.
Hey, Gary. How are you? Thanks for letting me come back again.
Hey, thanks for doing it. Always good to chat with you. Lots of things to talk about. Yep.
That is true. Okay, always fun things going on here in Weaverville. Sometimes we call it Weaver Vegas.
Okay. That could be a whole nother podcast.
Yeah.
So I have to know, from a shop owner perspective, you look at what's gone on here recently with the Sarah Brazier sampler and some other projects that have really hit. And then the inability to get linen and inability to get silk. From a shop owner perspective, that has to not only test you, but just really wear thin as you try to service customers. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it. It's got to be a real struggle.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess the first part of that is, wow, what a great success and yes. What a fantastic indicator yep. of what's happening in the industry. And I don't mean just success for the shop owner, but, you know, what a fantastic indicator about what's happening out there. I mean, people walk into my shop on a regular basis, and if they're not current stitchers, you know, maybe they stitched like 15 years ago or 20 years ago, they'll say, and they make the comment to me, wow, you know, I've not seen a shop like this in such a long time. I really thought this was dying out. And I immediately smile, and I have to kind of check myself, because I just want to, there's so much enthusiasm going on around us, you know, in the industry, that's, you have to know where to look for it. You know what I mean? And so, right. I think that seeing things happen like with Sarah Brazier and some other really, cool things that are going on right now that we see on social media are really strong indicators that there are lots and lots of people out there stitching, you know, and there are a lot of young people out there stitching too. They're doing something a little bit different, than what, you know, we traditionally think of, or what we've kind of grown into, I guess, in terms of samplers and things like that. They're doing some other things, but there are tons of people out there stitching. So I guess first and foremost, I was thrilled to get that validation of that. And then to your question about taxing, it's a challenge because, you know, I mean, as a new shop owner, for me particularly, that was a challenge because it's hard not to feel defeated in some way, because you're not able to service your customer, at the speed that they, of course, would like to receive their product. And so from a business perspective, you know, with my background, I immediately start stepping back through the process that led to that and figuring out what could we do different, you know, how do we keep that from happening again? And I think all of us are thinking about that. You know, the designers are thinking about that. You know, the producers of linen are thinking about that. Distributors are thinking about it. Shop owners are thinking about it. You know, how do we manage, you know, the flow within the market and the demand? And of course, that's an age old question for any industry. But the fact that we're having that discussion in that way means that there is a lot of growth in the industry. You know, right. It's kind of expanding. It's taking a big, deep breath. Yeah. And it's a very exciting place to be right now.
Yeah. And as a business owner, that's a really tough question, because you say, all right, I'm going to stock up on enough linen that the next time I have it. But you can't do that because, number one, there's no economic sense in carrying all that inventory. And then what's to say what you have in stock is what people will want for the next big thing, whatever that is.
Exactly. Yeah, so, you can pretty much say it won't be.
Yeah, exactly.
You won't have the thread and you won't have the linen. And so, you know, you can't really go at it like that. Although that is the temptation, because when you find yourself in a situation like that where you just – you want to fix it, that's the first thought in your mind is, okay, I'm going to buy everything I can and I'll just sit here and wait for, you know, the business to come to me. And that doesn't really work, to your point. But yeah, you know, you start to think about, well, what caused the problem? And how do you manage through that? And, you know, it's an interesting place to be, because you really have to start to look around you and figure out what your different options are, and you have to start to work together. And that's one thing that I think is great, is that people are working together through some of these problems. I mean, I've talked to Jean about it on a number of occasions, you know, to get some advice from her and get her perspective on it and how to manage through it. You know, we talk to our providers of silks, and they go and talk to France, you know, if we're talking about a Varisoise, for example, and figure out, you know, and they want to know from the designers early on when they, you know, have something coming out. And it's just, it's a good problem to have in a way, you know. And one thing I will say too is the response of the stitching community was not what I expected. I really expected to get beat on. when something like that happens, you just, you know, right, you feel right. bad about it, and you expect that you're going to, you know, be whipped with a wet noodle for it. And, you know, there's certainly been some folks that have been disappointed, no doubt about that. But, you know, from a broad view, everybody has just been so amazingly understanding and patient. And, you know, they get this issue with linen and, you know, with fibers, and everybody's so excited to stitch it, but they're willing to wait until we can try to get through it. And of course it helps that things are starting to come through the pipeline now too. You know, we're starting to get some things out and satisfy some of those needs. So that helps. But
oh yeah, just because it's close to both of us, we use Sarah Brazier as an example. I mean, that stitch along group is what, 710 or so people now. I'd be surprised if there's been a stitch along group that involved a chart that you buy in this manner that is that big. And, you know, that was a big hit at a time when Lakeside Linens was, you know, because of personal things, were unable to produce. And that's just a big hit of a whole lot of people asking for a lot of silk and big pieces of linen. This isn't just your standard cuts that you have in the store all the time. These are big pieces of linen. And, I've been really encouraged and happy to see, and this is not going to come out right, but the level-headedness throughout that stitch-along group. Everybody just hanging in there and celebrating those who are able to get linen and thread, and celebrating when they get their own. And it really has become part of the fun of that is, oh, so-and-so got their thread and linen today. They get to start. It just kind of builds momentum. And it's been fun, though I know people have been frustrated. And you know, you can understand it. I mean, you do get all charged up to do a project, especially like that. And you get the chart and that big, beautiful chart, and you read it and all the history that's in there, and then you can't stitch it. It's just
right, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, and that's not it. Eliza Bell Cox is another one, and we've had just a lot of other activity. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot in the hobby as a whole. Because you'll hear people say, like that customer, oh, I thought this was dying off. And you hear that, and we hear it from time to time. But then if you look in other places, because I look at the floss tube community, and I look at the regional retreats that have been held, one most recently in New Jersey that Arlene Cohen and company put together. And then there was a post I did not know about StitchCon that is happening this in June in Cincinnati. And when I found out about it, I thought, oh, I could drive there. I'm going to go to that. No, you're not. It's sold out, and there's a waiting list of multiple hundreds. And I thought, well, then for sure we're going to get Fiber Talk. Christine and I will be at the 2019 StitchCon, assuming they have it. And so we'll get registered for that right away. And so I went to do that. And no, that's been sold out. And that list is even longer. And I start to think, where is the dying hobby? Because I don't see it here. And I don't see it. And most of the, not most of, but a good portion of the floss tube people are young people. So where is that dying? That young people aren't interested. There's, you know, and I say younger than me, But you know, young people, 30s, 40s, maybe even 20s, who, you know, it's not dying. They're actively stitching, and they're actively stitching a lot. I mean, that the stitch mania thing, and if you join that group, people who, I mean, that's just utter craziness, starting a project every day in May. And there was a ton of people doing that. And that's not a dying hobby. That's a thriving, enthusiastic hobby. And it just really got my wheels spinning about, you know, when I hear people say it's dying, it's like, I don't know where you're looking, but in some of these areas, it's not. So.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I could not agree more. And, you know, I also spend a ton of time thinking about it, you know, because the business fascinates me. It does. I mean, that's I love the craft. I do. Clearly I do. It's why I did this. But, you know, coming to it from a business background, I love trying to figure out what's going on behind the scenes too, and what's driving everything. And I knew all along it wasn't dying. You know, it just wasn't. We had an active stitch group. We had a lot of people stitch, and social media has exposed a lot of stitchers, you know, and it's also drawn new people to the craft. So there are a lot of new stitchers out there. And, you know, so I completely agree with you. I think it's there's a huge group of people out there globally, not just in the U.S., stitching. And, you know, I don't see it dying. I see it transitioning. And I think that you know, and this is my belief, and you know, I can't say that I'm there yet myself as a shop owner, but I think shop owners have to transition a little bit. You know what I mean? I think we as participants.
Yeah, so true. Yeah.
I think as participants in the marketplace, you have to pay attention to what happens in the marketplace, and you have to respond. You know, that's our role. We very, very seldom do participants in the marketplace get to create the market. We actually need to respond to what's happening around us. And, you know, I think that this is an opportunity for a lot of people, a lot of shop owners, and a lot of prospective shop owners to create something or recreate something that will meet a huge need out there, because there are tons of people stitching. They're buying their stuff from online shops and in a lot of places, because that's the only option they have. You know, a lot of shops have closed, and that's one of our problems. A lot of brick and mortars, the folks that opened the brick and mortars in the 80s and the 90s are ready to retire, and it is just a fact of life. You know, they've been doing it for 20, 25, 30 years, and they're ready to retire. And, you know, the shops aren't necessarily being purchased by other people. Instead, they're closing. And the rate at which shops are closing versus the rate at which new shops open and are successful over a couple of years is pretty, you know, pretty drastically tilted toward closure, from what I can figure out. You know, I really want to get some statistics on it from some distributors and things, folks that really have an ear to the ground. But what I've observed over the last 4 years that I've been participating, and, you know, I was kind of in and out as a brick and mortar online shop until a year ago, where I finally got home and got the brick and mortar open. I see us shrinking in size in terms of brick and mortars. And I think that becomes problematic for a couple of reasons. When I look out long term over the industry and I think about brick and mortars going away, you know, I realize and I understand that business changes and avenues of business change. But what we lose with that is the ability to touch and feel the fibers in the fabric, the social interaction that you get from physically being with other people when you have stitch groups and classes and things like that. And then I think over a longer period of time, if all the brick and mortars really close and cease to be, I think quality, things, what's available to us as stitchers, the quality will drastically change. You know, it'll become very standardized. You won't have these beautiful fabrics and these beautiful fibers that we have available to us now that have happened since the 1990s up through now. You know, all that stuff will kind of cease to be, and things will get very commoditized, you know, and you'll have very basic fabrics and fibers out there. And that's my fear. And that's why I'm very passionate about brick and mortars and, you know, online shops. If they can keep that variety out there, I think that's great, too. I think there's a place for some of that, too. I'm not, you know, I'm not kind of against all the online shops. I think they're meeting a need. But I do think that there's a big opportunity for brick and mortars to reach out and expand and start to service a lot of these younger stitchers, because there are a ton of them out there. They really are. They're doing it a little different than what we, you know, grew accustomed to through the 80s and 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, but, you know, when you speak about the online shops, especially, you know, particularly the ones that are exclusively online, the local shops, the brick and mortar shops, they can play in that field, and you're an example of that. You engage as much, I don't know if it's as much online, I don't know your business, but you engage extensively online in terms of orders and interaction, along with the people who walk in the door, and I think that speaks to embracing the online community, and I got to believe for some people, you've become their local needlework store. It's just all done online and by phone and email. And the internet does not exclude local needlework stores. You can see them across the country. Successful ones are promoting and engaging online. They have Facebook groups, they have blogs, they have all manner of things that keep them connected to the community online, in addition to the people who walk in the door. And you know, go stitching for classes, all manner of things. I mean, that you can play in that mentality that, well, I can't do online, I'm a store. No, you can. You can be very active.
Yeah, I could not agree with you more. I mean, you're right. So that was kind of my approach from the beginning. So, you know, in the years where I thought through how this shop would work and what I wanted, that was really the first linchpin that I had to put down. You know what I mean? Like, when I considered opening a shop, I didn't do it in the beginning. And the reason I didn't do it is because the online presence, the way that it had to be managed when I wanted to do it at that time was too expensive for me. The space that I would have to pay for to hold the digital images was very expensive at a point in time. And so I didn't do it then, you know, and I was still working. I still had my day job. So I waited to see what was going to happen with all that. And, you know, in another couple, 3 years, that really changed into my favor, and it became very manageable to hold a huge number of digital images online and be able to have them come up very quickly. You know, all those things are important. Right. So I put a lot of thought into the online stuff. You bet I did. Now, what was happening in the background was all the social media. So in that time period where I was trying to figure out how do I make the online stuff work, and there were some shops already doing it, but they were paying a lot of money for it. And, you know, I wasn't prepared to do that at the time. But while I was trying to figure out how to make that work and things were changing in you know, that particular arena, and the price was coming down on digital storage, social media blew up, you know, and you got a whole different perspective into what it meant to be online. And so being online doesn't just mean, to your earlier point, a web page. I mean, that is a basic fundamental. That's kind of your stake at the table. You know, you definitely have to have an e-commerce site, an ability to sell online, that you can easily manage, and preferably you can manage yourself rather than having to pay somebody to do it. But, you know, the other side of that is the interaction with your customers. And you made a great point. My customer base is not Weaverville, North Carolina. My customer base is very broad. You know, it's global. We have customers all over the world, and we're a year old, you know, and I'm not bragging about that. I guess I'm putting that out there because that's the world we live in, you know, and the world is, you know, it's cliche, but it's a much smaller place because of the ability to interact you know, digitally with folks. Right. And, you know, you can have a conversation on Facebook. You can, Nicola and I sometimes talk through Facebook. It costs nothing. That right. blows my mind. You know, when I lived overseas a few times for my old job, and I spent a fortune on phone calls, you know, back and forth. And now to just be able to talk and it's essentially free is just kind of mind boggling. And so there's so many opportunities opened up right now. You know, not just for us as an industry, but for a lot of other industries. But, you know, in particular for us, I think that we just have to broaden our horizon and how we're thinking about the customer base. You know, because there are so many people out there stitching, and you call off a lot of the sites and stuff. And one of the areas that I'm not too active in, although, you know, I've had a number of floss tubers come in the shop and they're like, "Hey, Kim, you really got to do it." And I'm like, you know, I just got on Instagram. I'm trying. And they're like, "Well, here's the sites and here's what you need to do." It's fantastic because they're really very helpful. But, you know, there's a lot of places that you have to have your toe in the water.
Right.
And, you know, it's if you're ADD by nature, this is a great world to live in because you've got so many different things that you can do, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm excited.
Yeah.
I'm so excited about it. And I really, really want other people to kind of embrace it and reach out there and broaden up a little bit, you know, and service all these people that are wanting to stitch, because, you know, a lot of the young people are stitching quick, easy kits in some cases. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people stitching a lot of things, but when I think about a younger demographic that we see, you know, around here or online sometimes, they're doing quick hits, and it's just part of where they are in their life right now.
Right.
But I don't think we should ignore that. You know, I think what we need to do is reach out to them and, you know, provide them what they're looking for in a way that broadens their horizon, you know. And so maybe for the next 3 or 4 years, they're just going to stitch these little quick hits. Maybe they won't stitch for a few years and then they come back to it like most of us did, you know. But if they realize that there are places where they can go and they can buy fiber and they can buy fabric and they can see other types of charts and they can sit down with a group of people and actually learn something, I think, you know, they're going to be very open to that, and they'll stay with the craft. They'll come back to it, and then they'll teach other people, you know, and the cycle just kind of continues. And I think that's the goal, you know, is for us to, I don't think needlework will ever die. It never has. You know, needlework has been around for eons, long before the first sampler, you know, that we found. And I think needlework will continue for generations. But it waxes and wanes, and I think it's important that we keep in mind, you know, how to create some opportunity for folks to realize that they can do this in a broader way, and to, you know, give them a chance to teach other people when it's their turn.
Right. Well, in that you talk about younger people and quick hit smaller projects. Those are the projects that they can stitch waiting in the car for the kids or sitting at ball games or just before a concert or any number of things that they can throw in their purse and haul out and do it while there's, you know, idle time. And I think a lot of the small pieces that are available these days, designs, Little House Needleworks comes to mind, that are so popular. And with the threads that are available and ground cloth too, but particularly the threads, really makes it fun to do those little things. And then you get that short run and then a sense of accomplishment. And if it becomes an ornament or something, then so much the better. But, you know, those hours, I mean, many hours as a dad sitting in a car with, you know, waiting for kids. And if I had a thought to have some stitching along, it'd have been pretty smart, but I didn't, but you know, that's the kind of thing. And to service that need, and it really is a need, through designs and through stores and your online offerings is a big plus. And, you know, and yeah, the social media has done something that nothing else has been able to do. And that's connect people that, you know, a lot of people in small towns who might know one other person who stitches now can know hundreds of people and share what they're doing by picture, by description, by whatever. and really connect. That you know, that's something that the hobby has really never seen, is that ability, and that's game changing.
It is, you know, and that feeling of I honestly feel in many ways as close to those stitchers that I talk to online or that I talk to on the phone as I do the ones that come in the shop. They're family. You know what I mean? Like, it's a really interesting thing. And I never really saw that coming, to be honest. But it's just such a broad, big family. I don't know how to explain it, but it's really interesting. And I think everybody who has an opportunity to participate in those big groups online, or, you know, who's running a shop where they've got a chance to talk to some people in different places, you just start to feel like your family's really, really big. You know what I mean? And,
yeah. And
it's really kind of neat because you are bonded through this common love of a craft, and you always have something to talk about. You know what I mean? I can't tell you how many people that I've talked to on the phone that I just really enjoy their conversations about what's going on in their life, you know, why they're stitching this thing, you know, where they're going on a vacation, whatever it is. You know, it's just really cool to me to feel like you know these people. And you know, I know that you don't always get to see them in person, but I think that's in a way how the world has changed. I do think people need social interaction. I think we crave that. And, you know, a lot of times we're very busy these days. And so a chance to talk on the phone with somebody or online with somebody or to actually go into a stitching retreat like StitchCon and, you know, or another class or into a shop and sit down and interact with people is such a huge privilege. And I think that's why those things are sold out. You know, I mean, it's just people have realized that, you know, it's important to make time to interact with other people. And I do think that we're seeing the resurgence of embroidery in general and needlework because people want to create something. I think there's something very basic in a human being, most human beings, not all, but most, that they want to create something.
Yes.
You know, and it's just a matter of how much time do they have, how much confidence do they have, and how many tools do they have to create with, you know. And so I think, you know, you foster all those things and people start to really feel accomplished about it. So I think that's why we're seeing so many people doing it. People have been so busy for a long time. And the same kids that we talk about, you know, they're always on the phone. Well, I can tell you a whole lot of adults are always on their phone too. But those kids and a lot of those adults are making time, you know, for their hobbies.
Right.
And especially this one, you know, I have a lot of young people come in here and, you know, they might just be looking for thread. And I'm like, oh, what are you going to do with that? And they start going down this path of what they're making. And it may not be, you know, needlework. They may be doing something entirely different, but it's really pretty cool. Like I had a young girl come in here last week and she wanted to buy some white thread. And she bought like several different kinds of white thread. I said, what are you doing with that? She said, oh, I'm going to dye it with some mulberry berries. And I was like, really? I want to see some pictures of that.
Yeah.
And sure enough, she sent me these cool pictures of it today, you know? And so it's very interesting,
wow,
all the little tendrils there are of this going out and what people are doing with them.
Yeah. No, I had a heartwarming story the other day, actually kind of brought a tear to my eye. A lady wrote, and this is not bragging about Fiber Talk, but It was just one of those you don't expect. She wrote that she had just it sounded like a horrible day, got in the car, and if I read between the lines, pretty much just about lost it, you know, just collapse into whatever. And during the drive home, put on one of our midweek shows, and it took her, you know, gave her an escape, gave her something else, something more positive and uplifting. And she said by the time she got home, she was feeling a whole lot better about everything. And, you know, but that's that community, that sharing of the hobby that was a difference maker for her. And on that one day, a really bad day. And, you know, I just felt really good because, you know, obviously we want as many listeners as we can get, But I'll just take that one for that day. You know, just that's good. That's good. That's all we need.
I completely agree. Yeah. I completely agree. There are days in the shop, you know, that are like that. Like, you know, you never know what's going to happen in here, and you never know who's going to come through the door, who's going to call on the phone. But every once in a while, you know, you feel like you made a difference in somebody's life. And, you know, maybe it sounds, I don't know how that sounds, you know, but that's the way it is. You know, I mean, to me, it's a very important thing that we do. It's not just selling a product. It's being part of somebody's, you know, that few moments of their life, you know, when they come right. in and they just, maybe they just need to talk. I mean, I joke a lot of times that we're, and other shop owners would agree with me that you're, you know, you're kind of part bartender, part, you know, priest, part, you know, whatever, psychologist. But, you know, we all need that, you know, you all need that. And so you either find it in your local shop or you find it online with your Stitch group. And I see a lot of that happening online too. And I see people talking to each other. And the neatest thing that I see online is supporting people in emotional crisis. And so I see, you know, somebody's sick, somebody's dog, animal, pet is hurt. Somebody's spouse is not well. You know, there's an outpouring of support, and I've seen it make a difference. You know, you can watch the post online, and you see the person that's kind of the subject of all that at the end of it come back and say, "Wow, you know, you guys really got me through that."
Yep.
Now that's an amazing thing, to be quite honest. You know, that's an amazing thing. And if you think about that, some people, and it's a lot of people. It's not just some people. It's a lot of people, you know, that is their support system. You know, they may be in a place in life where they just don't have a lot of people that are physically there around them to help them with those things. And, you know, it's important. I think kindness is important in life. You know, I think a lot of integrity is important. Ethics are important, clearly, too. But, you know, a little bit of kindness goes a really, really long way. And I love that part of this craft. I love seeing that happen, whether it's in the shop or online. You know, it's just a really neat thing. To me, that's very, very gratifying. That keeps me coming back here, even when the days are hard sometimes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think we would be surprised to know how many people are alone day in and day out, and if they didn't have Stitching and Facebook and you know, those kinds of things, that they'd truly be alone. But they have people they can connect with, they have something to share, and in a lot of ways have something not come incoming but outgoing. You know, hey, I know about this, I can help you with this. And it's difference making across the board. And that's, you know, if it wasn't for the internet, we wouldn't have nearly as much of that.
It wouldn't
be possible.
Yeah. We'd still feel very closed. It's still, you know, I think the same number of people, maybe not quite as many, because I do think social media has helped, you know, our hobby grow a little bit. Take a deep breath, as I said. But, you know, I think, without the internet, without social media, we'd still have a lot of people out there stitching. We would, but people would be looking around going, "Oh, it's a dying craft." I think there would still be millions of people out there stitching.
And all saying the same thing.
It's a dying craft, you know, and if they only knew, you know, I can tell you when I opened this shop. So I am from here. I grew up 4 miles down the road. And I left for a long time. You know, I went and did my career thing, and then I desperately wanted to come home. That's kind of the age-old story, you know. And so finally made my way home and opened this shop. And when I opened this shop, I really didn't have a group of stitching friends. I did not in this area. My friends were in Raleigh, and there were some other places. And so over the first few weeks, people walked in, and I met them, and I invited them to Stitch Group. And, you know, we had, I think on the third week, we had 16 people in here, which was pretty big for me. I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
They lived literally on the same street, some of them, and never knew each other, and certainly never knew that they stitched. You know, and so now there are great friendships that have formed here. The same thing happens, you know, in the online community. You know, it's just, it's great to just find people that share your passion.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt. Boy, on the same street and didn't know. Oh, boy.
Here in Louisville,
Completely isolated, but right next door.
Small town. And they've all been very grateful. You know, they've all expressed at different points in time how grateful they are to have this group of people that that they meet and that they now have in their lives. And, you know, and I think the same is true online. You don't always get to see people. I'll tell you a great example of that is Krista Grammer, who broke her leg in Scotland. And, you know, of course, Nicola flew up to be with her during surgery, but then another person's come up that she's finally met. And I wasn't sure, but it looked like from the post that maybe that's the first time that she's met her in person. And, you know, I mean, that's the kind of group that we have. That's the kind of friendships that get formed is, you know, people take the time and they'll go out of their way and all over the world. You know, it's really to me, it's amazing. I know I'm gushing about it, but
that's amazing example. Krista, serious damage to her leg, surgery, the whole bit in Scotland by herself. And I think it's three different people, Nicola and two others, have made the time to go and spend time with her and be there. So she's not alone. And I guess she's, I don't even know when we're recording, but on the 18th of June, I guess she's going home in a couple, 3 days, or expects to. But even that, you know, that's a long trip home with a leg that can't be bent, can't, you know, it has to be straight out and I'm sure propped up. And I hope someone can fly over and fly home with her. But yeah, she's not been isolated. She's not been alone. The stitching community reached out and connected with her and gave her some company and support. And then, you know, she posted pictures of cards and balloons and flowers that people have sent. And quite frankly, I think when she gets back, the best thing everybody can do is buy a chart from her.
Well, you know, Lucy Calcutt's in a right. Stitch Along too. And she's been hard to keep here in the shop. She's a traveler.
Yeah. That's
people
a
are
good
loving
one.
Her.
Yep.
She's got another one coming out too. So yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree.
Yeah. But I've thought, when she gets home, keep her busy.
Exactly.
Shipping charts. Yeah, exactly.
She can roll around and do that, right?
That's right. Don't spend money on flowers.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. Yeah, she was on crutches today, so maybe she'll be able to get around. And I mean, you know, we've all had some injuries and you know, surgeries and different things, but when that happens, you feel very alone. I don't care if you've got, you know, your spouse sitting beside you or whatever. It's tough, you know, and you're in pain and you don't feel good. And it was really cool to see smiles on her face in those pictures. Really neat to me to see that, because I know that she was in a lot of pain. And so, you know, I'm grateful to all the folks that reached out to her to try to help her through that.
Yeah. Yeah. Four breaks and one leg and a screwed up knee. That's pain.
Yeah.
I don't care how you look at it. That's pain. And surgery and, oh man, yuck. Yeah. But, it was good to see a smile on her face in the pictures and a stitching friend nearby, new stitching friend next to her to give her some company. That was fantastic. Yep. And it's, you know, it's interesting when you talk about the stores and connecting people. You know, one of the things that we see often, actually we see a lot, and really we need a list somewhere, is I'm going to be in thus and such a town. Are there any needlework stores nearby? And we see that post time and time again. And these are people going on vacation or on a business trip. And one of their priorities is, can I find a needlework store somewhere so I can go connect with stitchers? And, you know, invariably people say, yeah, there are. And sadly, too often, no, there's not. And, you know, I wonder how many times people do a private message and say, well, there's no store, but there's three of us who get together, you know, come join us. And I wonder how many times that happens.
Yeah. I think it does happen, you know, because I've connected some people, you know, that are heading to Raleigh and that live in Raleigh and didn't know that there was, you know, stitching groups there and guilds and things like that. And, you know, they've taken them right in. So, that's a great point. And, you know, we should definitely be doing a little more of that and just saying, hey, come stitch with us. There is a book that gets published out there, and I can't tell you the name of it because we're not in it. We haven't done that yet. But there is some kind of like travel guide out there that lists all the shops. But I think that as a shop, you have to pay to be in that. So I don't know if all the shops are actually in it. You know, it's that kind of thing. But it would be great in some of these big stitch groups to start posting where all the shops are. That's a great resource. That's a good idea. You know, like Stitch Mania and some of the other really big ones to have a list on there of the locations of the shops so that as people travel, they could just go check that list. And maybe some of them have it and I just don't know about it. But, you know, I think that would be fantastic. That would be great. Absolutely.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. And I'd love to have one because, you know, I'd put a link on our site and point them to it. And
yeah,
use it regularly.
Yeah. is better than having to buy a book. You know, I mean, it's great that you've got the book, but it's some shops honestly just can't afford to be in the book. You know, and so I think if that were a free resource out there, in addition to the book is great because some people want the book, and I think that's great. But for the shops that really can't just put that into their budget, I think it's a fantastic idea to have an online listing.
Yeah.
You bet. We should try to make that happen. Try to figure that out.
Yep. I'll put that on the list. It's a long list, though. It's a long list.
That means you get to live forever. It's like Stash.
Oh, that's how that works?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. Pause for a moment here while I write this down.
I promise you as a shop owner.
Oh, okay.
The more you buy, the longer you live.
The longer I live. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think I've seen your movie. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think I have. Yep. Yep, I think so. Yeah. Are you, you know, the supply of linen and threads and stuff, are you seeing that? Is that in normal times pretty level? You're able to get just about anything within a short amount of time? Is it pretty level, or do you really have to watch that?
You really have to watch it.
Okay.
You do, and it's been that way for a long time. And I talked to a lot of other shop owners too, and it's the same. It has been that way for a while. Linen is expensive. And so even the folks that import it and the folks that produce it, it's not something people sit on in bulk. And threads, you know, they're the same way, and I don't know why, because they're not as expensive as linen, although I won't say that they're inexpensive, especially silks are not inexpensive. But, you know, I think it's just a matter of economics, you know, and not being able to judge the demand. I think folks keep a lower quantity on hand. So, you know, and it could be the very first thing that we talked about too, is that, you know, if the market is truly expanding, and I certainly believe that there is something going on there, that will drive a response from suppliers. But I don't know that it will ever get to the point where it's plentiful. You know, I just don't think that's the nature of it. I think it's too expensive for anybody to really sit on a huge bulk supply. And so that means that, you know, we're always going to have to manage it and be aware of what's coming up and, you know, try to respond. And, you know, people will have to manage expectations too. And I just think that is the way of it. I think we see it more now because we do have this this social media and the online world. I think we're just more aware of a problem that's always been there.
Yeah, that's probably true. Probably true. Now, I remember some time ago, I went in, it was a needlepoint, charted canvas needlepoint project that called for a thread that was not normal. And the shop owner slipped up, you know, let her emotions take over for a second. She goes, "Oh, these designers and these custom threads." She says, "I know I'm going to have to order two boxes just to get this one skein for you." And it was like, well, I can go get it elsewhere if it's that much trouble. But then, you know, the second thought is that's a real problem. You know, that presents a problem to the shop owner, because then she has inventory that maybe I'm the only one who ever asked for it. And then there it sits. And but then the next thing is she orders two boxes and 50 people come in and she can't get enough of it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. So here's my thoughts on that for what they're worth. So, you know, some distributors have changed that model, and you can buy what you need, you know, onesies, twosies kind of thing. Not all, but some. And I think it's fantastic for the ones that do that for us, because they recognize that it is a burden to a shop owner to have to buy a particular quantity of something. The other thing that will solve that problem, and that, you know, we've seen start to happen, is shops talking to shops. And that's always been true. I've talked to shop owners who have been in the business for 30 years because I'm all about asking questions and trying to learn, you know. And so whenever I get a chance to talk to somebody who's done this, you know, a long time, I take that opportunity. And, you know, they tell me all the time, you know, you guys have to talk to each other, you know, and they give me examples of how they used to do it, you know. And there, when there were shops on every corner, they would call each other, you know, and say, hey, do you have this? So-and-so needs it. And I can tell you honest and true that, you know, I do call the shops around me. I do, and see if they have something, and I send my customer there, or I've called shops that, you know, are on the other side of the country from me and said, hey, I really need this. I'm in a bond, and they'll send it to me in the mail and I get it right away, you know. And so I think that's one solution to that problem, is that as shop owners, we have to work together, and then we can solve some of those supply problems in some cases, and some of those inventory issues where you have to order a quantity. And the other thing is, you know, and not everybody's going to like to hear this, but, you know, get your stuff online, because then you've got a broader audience for it, you know, and people who are looking for something that's old or unusual can find it, you know, and they can buy it, because, you know, most things out there, whether they're charts or threads or whatever, that sit on your shelf for a long time, there's somebody that's looking for it somewhere,
right,
you know,
right, yeah.
And you just have to find the person. And I listen to one of your, I listen to your podcasts all the time. I listen to them in the morning when I'm getting ready, and I listen to them late at night in the shop when I'm trying to do orders and stuff. And lots of times I listen to them over and over again, because I hear different things every time I listen to it, and I learn. You've got great people on there, to talk through, you know, their experiences, which is helpful to me. But, you know, you made a comment, I think you were talking to Carol Lake, and you guys were talking about threads for needlepoint, and I was sitting there thinking, oh my gosh, I've got to finish my projects, because I've caught some things that I have been sitting on for about 8 years, and I'm like, oh, if I run out of thread, it's going to kill me. And you were talking about how people post out there, oh, you know, I need this particular dye lot, does anybody have it? And you made the comment that you knew before you could get upstairs and go through your inventory and find it, somebody else would have volunteered that they had that thread in that dye lot, and, yep, you know, it would be in the mail going to that person.
Yep.
And that's the truth of it, you know?
Oh, it is, yeah. And it happened. It happened. And then I went and looked, and I did have it, but I was 10th in line by that time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, two great things about that. People are very kind and willing to share those things. But you know, secondarily to a shop owner, or a prospective shop owner, you know, it's important. It's important to invest a little bit of time to get an online presence, you know. And I just think, to your earlier point that you made, that's what we have to do. You know, I think that's what the market demands. And you know, and some folks will choose not to for their own reasons, you know, and that's okay. But I think, you know, if we're talking to people who are hopefully 15 or 20 years younger than me and are thinking about this, you know, that's where you start, and that's what you need to think about. It's a dual-edged approach, really three ways, not just two, because you've got your online presence and your e-commerce, and you've got your brick and mortar, but then you also need to think about your social media presence, and that's a whole lot of things going on, you know. And but I think that's just the world that we live in today, and so I don't see that the market is decreasing. I don't think it's a dying craft. I think we're expanding, and I think the folks that have been there now, doing this thing in the dark and in the silence and all by themselves, are now come alive in social media, and we can see them and we can hear them, and, you know, we need to respond to them and help them grow in this craft, because, you know, those folks that are doing those quick little quick hit kits and stuff, I think that's fantastic. That's what they want to do right now, but they're going to get to a point in life where they have a little more time, and maybe they want a little more challenge, and there's a lot more out there for them, you know. And I think that's the goal, and that's the responsibility that we have as influencers, whether you're shop owners or whether you're floss tubers or whatever you're doing, that you have influence on, you know, folks out there that are trying to learn and grow, is to show them what's available. And, you know, we need to teach people too.
Yeah, that, and that's key. That's key. There really has to be a teaching mentality throughout the hobby. And there, I think there is in a lot of places, but I think you can also find some places where there is not. And yes. I think you could equate those places with dying.
Yes.
The sharing, the how do I do this, or I'm not sure this is right. And we have the means. We have the means to make a quick video, share five pictures, any number of things, or point people to 50 different videos for how to do this or that. And that sharing, that teaching part is so key, because that's what builds everybody up. And as a former teacher, I know firsthand that the best way to learn something is to teach it. Because
then you figure out what you didn't know.
That's right. In a hurry, you do.
And you figure it out real quick.
Yep. Yep, you sure do. And then the first class, there'll be the question. Oh, man, I didn't think of that.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it's key. It's key is the teaching, and not formal class teaching. You know, that's obvious. It's the day-to-day, incident by incident, item by item, you know, seemingly trivial thing to you. You know, second nature to you, but the one thing that'll get somebody over the hump with a project, if you just help them with one little tip. And you have no idea of knowing, you know, you look at social media, how many times the same question is asked over and over. And you think, oh, for crying out loud, people, look it up. But people, you know, a lot of people are new. They don't know where to look. And it's that one thing that's keeping them from really getting going. And so, you know, smart people are just patiently answer the question for the 50th time, because you just don't know. Is this person, first time they put a piece of thread through a needle and don't know where, you know, what hole to put the thread through? You know, it's, you got to help them out. And then you may make a convert for life with just one little thing. And it's teaching, but it's just basic little things that, and there are some topics that, quite frankly, folks, look it up. It's been covered so many times.
Go get your encyclopedia off the shelf. What's the matter with you? A what? You
know, yeah,
there's
exactly,
like somebody out there who's like 15. He's like, a what? Off the where? But I completely agree. I mean, I'm going to tell you at least four times a week, and probably more than that, I stand at my little counter, and if I'm selling somebody DMC thread, who I think hasn't stitched in a while, or who might be new, and I don't ask them these things, I just try to figure it out. You know, I say, let me give you a few tips, and I talk to them about which end of the skein do you pull the thread out of, because it makes a difference.
Yes,
you
it
know,
does.
I mean, you
yes,
have to it pull does. It out of the end with the number, and if you don't, you've got a big knot. And some people just, they don't know that, and they don't understand why it's always in a giant knot, and they hate it. And if they hate it, they won't do it. You know, and so something just that simple of saying, you know what, slide these two labels toward the center, always pull it out from the end with the number, you'll get less knots. You'll get knots. It just is going to happen, but there'll be few, you know. And then how do you thread the needle? You know, and teaching somebody to thread the needle without having to lick and spit and shove it and use a threader, you know, just a little squiggle thing on your end of your finger. I've seen a video where somebody does it in the palm of their hand, which I haven't done that. But, you know, and I tell them right away, look, I'm going to show you how to do this. It's life changing. You're going to have to practice it. But once you get it, you will have a life skill, and you should teach everybody you know how to do this, you know. And they're like, oh, my gosh. And so they go off, and they probably spend 20 minutes trying to thread the needle, and then they finally break down and lick and spit. But eventually they will get it. You know, eventually they'll get it, and then they'll be like, wow, that was great. Yeah, just simple little things like that, you know. And it happens in Stitch Group. It happens in online, you know. It happens just wherever. And it's just taking that little minute, just 15 seconds sometimes, to give somebody a tip or show somebody something. And I think that's part of the joy of stitching, is being able to share something with somebody. I do. I love it.
Yeah. You need to trademark that. The Kim Young needle threading technique. Lick, spit, and shove.
Yeah.
Right. Get that trademarked.
I'll get crucified for that.
Yeah.
I don't do that. I don't condone that.
Lick and spit and shove. I love it. Yeah, brand that thing.
Desperate circumstance. Only if you have to. If you have to, you should. You should get that thread through the needle no matter what.
Yep. I have seen that video in the palm. Apparently it works, but I'm not interested.
Yeah, I can't do that one. Now, I do it on the tip of my finger all the time. Most of the time I get it to work. You know, once in a while when I'm trying to show somebody, of course I can't get it, but right, most of the time it does. And I actually learned that from Susan Greening Davis, and I was probably 35 years old when I learned that. Uh-huh. You know, and it changed my life. I was like, wow. You know, because how much time do people spend trying to thread a needle sometimes? It's just, to some of us, it comes really super easy, but to most people, it doesn't, you know? And I mean, it's a skill set, really. And
yeah.
So
no, I use a threader. I don't even try. I just use a threader. It's just not worth it to me. And I'm always amazed when people, especially on some of the Stitch With Me videos, they'll thread that needle like it was nothing. It's like, I don't know how you do that. Give me a needle threader. I'm moving on.
Yeah, and,
yeah.
Which of the day, that's what you need to do. You need to have whatever tool you need. But the goal is to, you know, how did you start the show out? Beautiful art with needle and thread.
Fine art. Like, yes, fine art with needle and thread. That's right. We're a high-class operation here. Yeah.
Tonight, yeah.
Yeah, tonight. Yeah, because you know the alternative is stabbing ground cloth with needles. Yeah.
Yeah, that's me. I actually do use the poke and stab or the stab and pull method. My husband was asking me about that the other night. You know, do you do that? And I was like, not usually, because it looks different when I use a sewing method. I do it when I'm needle pointing. I do it with needle point because I'm using both hands. I've got it in a stand. But on embroidery and, you know, cross stitch, I will poke and stab. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or whatever you call it. One hand on the top and pull it through with the same hand on the bottom. I'm slow.
Yeah.
Get it done.
Use a stand. One hand on the top, one on the bottom, and go.
Yeah, I do that with needlepoint. I do. And I'm going to be doing that with Sarah Brazier, too. But I will not start Sarah Brazier until all my customers have their fabric. So, you know, that's kind of my mark in the sand. So I'm working hard to get them their fabric so that I can start.
It's a selfish motivation, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it takes, you know. But
yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I have learned that that stitch-along – and the number of, not number, but different kinds of linen and linen colors and what they do to the look of the sampler has, I think, maybe been the most fascinating part so far and has really taught me to look at the ground cloth in any project in a different way in what it can do for your overall piece.
Mm-hmm.
And because just the people who have obtained their linen and the different colors, boy, it's each one has its own beauty, and it's so much fun to look at and see. And then as they get more and more of the motifs in, to see it, the colors reflected with that background has it really makes me think, and you know, and it's been suggested, you know, buy a couple of yards of linen just to have around. And I thought, all right, if I did that, what would I buy? You know, what would I want as my, you know, standard linens other than white? What colors for, you know, for sampler type stuff or really for anything? But it's really amazing what people have uncovered to use for that sampler. It really is just some beautiful stuff.
You bet. Yeah, that's kind of the neatest thing that we do in the shop is, you know, we pull out linen on the table and then we go get the threads that are supposed to go with the chart and we throw it on different pieces of linen and we see how it looks. And it's amazing the difference that comes out when you do that, you know, and sometimes just you can pull one thread out of the mix and all the others look perfect on there, but you put that one thread back in and it changes the look, you know, and you can pull different kinds of thread out, you know, and throw it on the linen. It's just, it's a really fun puzzle. It is, and it's beautiful. It's really neat to see it online like that too and for everybody to get to see it because a lot of people just kind of, sometimes they just go with what's in the chart.
Right.
And that's okay. That's okay because you know that's going to look good. You know what I mean? It's been done and you know it's going to look good. But it's really fun when you see people kind of step outside that zone and start trying some different things. And it's very enlightening to see and have other people see that it's okay to do that, you
mm-hmm.
know, and that you get a beautiful product sometimes by changing some things up. You bet.
Well, and that's, you know, if there's a positive in the shortage of linen and silks for Sarah Brazier, it's just that. It's really demonstrated that there's nothing wrong with going off the chart and doing your own thing, selecting your own colors, your own threads, your own ground cloth, because if you take the time to do it, you come out with something just as beautiful. And it's yours. It's yours. It's your own creation. And we've seen that many times from people. You know, I don't know, maybe out of desperation, I want to start this. Give me some thread and some linen. But really have some nice things that are not the prescribed colors. And I think that's fun. I think it's a real good thing to for people to see and to learn. Is, yeah, it, because it's printed there, it doesn't mean you have to do it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you make a good point about personality. And I think that's very gratifying to a stitcher to find something that they love and that looks great. And, you know, when you were talking about that, I was sitting here thinking about, I don't know if you ever read Harry Potter or saw the movies, but Ollivander's Wand Shop. Yeah. So I think in the first one, you got to see Ollivander's Wand Shop. And the kids all go in there and they try to pick out their wand. And if you put the wrong wand in their hand, it does something really crazy. And when the right wand hits their hand, it's literally magic. You know, it works correctly. It's the same thing with linen. A lot of times people come in and they, you know, they're not sure what they want. And I'm kind of looking at their faces. I put the different linen down on the table and put the thread on it and seeing how they react, because it's not about me and it's not really about what I like or what I think looks good. It's really about what they, you know, what kind of, what they respond to, you know, and what kind of resonates with them. And it's really fun to see it in person. And it's just as fun to see it online when they find the right thing, you know, and the thing that, that looks good to them and that kind of expresses their personality a little bit. And, you know, I know we're just talking about linen and thread, but you do beautiful things with linen and thread. And I've seen lots of people's personalities come out through their linen and thread, you know, and it's just, it's really fun to see.
Kind of like a bride getting, finding the dress.
Exactly.
Maybe
yeah.
Not as extreme as that, but yeah.
I don't know. It's pretty extreme with Sarah Brazier.
Yeah.
People are pretty happy when they get it right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true of a lot of samplers. And, you know, it's great that people think hard about it because they put a lot of time and energy and money into their work.
Right.
And quite honestly, I forget who it was on one of your shows that said, time is your most valuable commodity. You know, it was probably Carol again, because that's the one I listened to recently. You know, don't force yourself to use a short thread. You know, she was saying, use a long thread, you know, time is your most valuable commodity. If you have to tear it all out, then you wasted your time. That's true of these samplers too. You know, you make an investment of yourself and spend a little time up front, you know, play around with it a little bit and see what you really like, what resonates with you, what calls to you, you know, and enjoy that process. That's a part of the process. You know, it's not just about getting it done and getting it on the wall or in the drawer. It's about the process, you know, and enjoying the feel of the fibers and the linen and, you know, seeing it come alive as you create it. So,
yep. All right, Kim, we're going to have to call it right there. I have more things to talk about, but another time.
Sorry. I'm a rambler.
No,
I'm sorry.
As I said to Carol Lake today, that's what makes you a perfect guest. We can just talk.
Very chatty.
I don't have to pull it out of you. It's fantastic.
No, I enjoyed it. I really did. And I appreciate you letting me talk about something that I'm passionate about tonight. It was just a lot of fun for me to talk about this because I love this industry and this craft. I really do. And I love the people that are doing it. And I'm so excited to see so many young people interested in it too. And I just, you know, it's really fun to me. So thanks for letting me talk about that. I know I went on about it, but thank you.
We appreciate the time and thanks to everyone for listening. And Christine and I will be back on Wednesday.